Howdy, y'all. Welcome to Components Live. I'm Ren, product marketer at Heretto and your podcast MC.
I'm Patrick, CEO here at Heretto.
And I'm Jared, lead solutions consultant.
Thanks for joining us on our weekly conversation about componentized and structured content. Hope you enjoy this 15 or so minutes of fun talking about everything from data to innovations in AI.
Glad you're catching our live show after it was live and is now a podcast. If you want to join the live show, we stream every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern on LinkedIn and YouTube, but you can always find the recording on your favorite podcast app. All right, let's get into it.
Hey, everyone. Happy Friday. Welcome to Components Live. We have the whole gang back again. It makes me really happy to be able to say that every single week. And Casey's joining us again. He's just been having too much fun. So he's crashing the party and we're happy to have him. So today we are just going to jump right into it because we have a juicy topic that the guys are ready to dive into. So I'm just going to let him take it. Casey, you want to intro what we're doing today?
Yeah, so an article came across one of my feeds about Bloomberg being sued based on data that they used to train their Bloomberg GPT AI and essentially sued for copyright infringement. And it looks like in this particular case, and there's more of these popping up, the court is going to probably throw it out and say that it's fair use. So I thought this was a really interesting conversation, and I know Patrick has some pretty strong views about this, so it would be fun to go back and forth and just dig into this a little deeper.
I think I would say I have some opinions on this. I'm not sure if they're strong views loosely held, but this is something that I've thought about quite a bit. So, you know, the fundamental concept here is like, where is copyright law going? And I think the strongest view that I have is from what I've seen so far, it feels like the historical application of copyright and fair use and IP and like IP management infringement is kind of incompatible in this new world. And like when you really start to break this apart, it gets into this conversation that everyone's having right now is like, what isn't incompatible in this new world? So we can go into that philosophical rabbit hole really quickly. But before we do that, I want to read an article, just a little blurb of an article that I think kind of frames up why I think this is so challenging. So I'm reading off of a legal firm's website right now. It's EPGD Law. And this is talking about how to avoid copyright infringement with artworks. And so this is an actual quote that I'm reading here. There's actually no percentage by which you must change an image to avoid copyright infringement. While some say that you have to change 10 to 30% of a copyrighted work to avoid infringement, that has been proven to be a myth. The standard is whether or not the artworks are substantially different or a substantial part has been changed, which is, of course, subjective. And when you start to apply that as your basis, like how do you even bring that into an AI world?
Well, it's interesting because, well, the first thing I'll say is it's interesting how subjective that particular case is. And when it relates to AI that has lots of money around it, anytime you have something, it's a subjective decision. It's subject to significant corruption. So that's the first thing I would point out is like, that's just interesting. And then because of that, I think the only way that you can make it work is actually through a mathematical model. And because these LLMs are mathematical models, you could very accurately say how different is something that came out of the output. Like you could really, there could be an equation for that. Whether or not that actually ever made it into the law, I don't think it probably will, but that's one way you could address it along with, you know, having companies who use public domain information or copyright information, having to provide their training data for inspection by regulators. Like that's how I would approach it, you know, given the small amount of knowledge I have on the subject.
So I think that's like, I think that you probably end up somewhere there if you really want to police this stuff. And so we should back up just for just a second and say like why this part of why this is top of mind for us right now. So in the very near future, we're going to be releasing our generative AI module in Heretto, which is Edo. And if you haven't seen it, Edo is a cute dog that is your AI companion when creating structured content. But it's a generative system. So like it actually helps you write content, you know, at your request. Like you can ask for it to create content for you. And for stuff that's kind of in the public domain, you know, think like, you know, write out all the common forms of encryption. Like it'll go and it'll write that. And fundamentally, that stuff is in the underlying model that we leverage, which comes through a cloud provider. And so there's these all these layers of abstraction that you have to think about. And like, where exactly is the attribution fundamentally when you go through those layers of abstraction and you think about the fact that what that model is really doing is it's just predicting the next token as it's putting this together, which isn't going to be a derivation of exactly one work, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's something that we've definitely been thinking about a lot and had some of those exact questions from customers. And I think for the most part, at least with our customers in the domain that we're in, there's probably very little actual legal exposure to something like that. But obviously, if you're a Bloomberg or something like that, you have potentially quite a bit of legal exposure.
So Jared, as a philosopher, how do you think about the idea that a mathematical model will could compile multiple copyrighted works together and somehow infringe multiple parties at the same time?
I mean, I'd be failed if I did that. Like, like that's how it works. Like I would fail a paper or a course or whatever if I turned in something that I had used multiple different sources and bundled it all together and just turned it in with my name on it. When I'm there, I have to cite like where I'm pulling. If it's even the idea, if I don't attribute the idea, that's not unique to me. But it's a fine line. Even when I do this, it's a fine line. Like, so if I was writing an overview of like a very common philosophical concept, I don't have to cite it. Like I can be like, if you're a philosopher, you should know this. And I don't need to cite every sentence I say in here, even though it's something we've all learned.
But how do you know?
That's the thing. It's like a case by case basis. So if I'm working on something technical to an expert audience, and I cite something in a particular field that everybody that I'm writing to should know, I often don't need to cite it. It's one of those things like, honestly, kind of the metric has been like, if I have a question about whether I should cite it, cite it. If it's something that we all take to be common knowledge, yeah, don't worry about it.
It's kind of like, you know, when you see it, right?
Yeah. I mean, it is. It is. If it's something like
there's an aspect of human,
yeah,
it's human intuition.
A lot
but like
of it
how
is.
Do you know it when you see it when you can't see through the thing that's creating it back to the work?
Like, that's the thing, yeah, that's fascinating about this that gets back to traceability of information with these models, which is like, yeah, a potentially very simple solution to this problem is that the models have to reference everything, right, that they use, even if they reference just one simple concept that happens to be, you know, not like general knowledge. You know, there's like a little link at the bottom of the response or whatnot, and it's got all the things that came into making that response. But that's actually a really difficult problem just in general right now, yeah, with LLMs, is that they're kind of black boxes and people don't exactly know what the path is for a specific response. They can't go back and get that traceability. Yeah. Maybe that gets solved in the future, but yeah, it's really interesting that like that could be a really simple solution, but we can't seem to figure it out.
Yeah, and I mean, some of that's going to depend on like the tokenization process in the response build too. Like, so if you see what, you know, name like 20 tokens in a row that matches some particular piece of data it's been fed, is that what it cites on when it hits like a certain number? Like, we'd have to like set up rules for this. So, you know, the human side, it's like I can go on my intuition on whether I need to be citing something or not. And then if somebody calls me out, I'll be like, oh, yeah, okay, I should have cited that. And I can go back and then add that citation in. But for a machine, you've got to make rules and you've got to set parameters. And then what do we do about the bounds of that? So 21 tokens, maybe that's where we go. Yeah, you need to cite there. 20 or less. No, like that's weird. Like, so we'd have to define what those, you know, what's the line of arbitration there?
And so there's actually an issue with that. If I go on and I read the next paragraph in this article that I have here, it says, the court will look at circumstances and what exactly has been copied. While copying a small part of an image may seem insignificant, it might be deemed substantial if it defines the essence of the piece. Mm. And so like, this is the problem, is that like, we've been able to handle these things because of the scale in the past, just on a case by case basis, because there was kind of like a, you know, it if you see it, right. You know, maybe you only took like, you know, Warhol's famous Campbell's soup thing. Maybe you just took a small strip, but like, I bet you anybody, you know, 100 pixel high, I guess that doesn't actually work when you're dealing with something that's not in pixels. You know what I'm talking about though, like a few inches of this and across, I bet you could probably be like, oh, that's a small piece of Warhol's, famous painting, and that could be copyright infringement. But like, you use that same parameter, that same sizing parameter in another circumstance, it just doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean, how are you going to tell whether it's a, you know, Jackson Pollock or whether my 3-year-old spilled paint? Like, I don't know.
Oh, shots.
Wow. Sorry. Was shot across the bow there, huh? That was fun.
Well, so like that happened with Girl Talk in the 2000s. They were a cut artist who would just take little snippets of songs and create a whole new song from it. And it was a huge deal in the copyright world because some artists, you couldn't even tell that it came from the song, the snippet that they took and made it into a new thing. But other ones, they were using the chorus and it was very easy to distinguish which song that came from. And those artists were very upset. And so I think it's like very indicative of the lines that we're getting into here.
And this kind of gets back to the core of the problem, is that you can't draw a line back because it goes through this black box. So you end up in this circumstance where we have to start asking ourselves as a society, are we just going to wall off entire sections of like knowledge and thought and things like that from these models and say, they can't touch these because these things are, you know, fall under a certain form of IP. And only things that fall in these other forms of IP are going to be part of the model, which, you know, I mean, there's benefits to that in some cases, but that also is going to make these models less powerful. So societies that choose to go that direction are going to get less powerful models, though they might be fairer. And, you know, which of those two things is better and how do you balance them?
Yeah. Ren, that example that you just brought up is really interesting, this, because there's a flip side to this, which is that if there is too much regulation or it is ruled that it's copyright infringement, you have the flip side. Someone with enough computing power could generate all the different combinations of types of content or music or songs or rhythms, and they could own all that copyrighted content. And now anybody that tries to use that is now subject to the same copyright laws, which is
diabolical. Absolutely.
I'll be right back. I've got a new business idea. I'll be back in a bit.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, like, I'm sure, and I don't know if people are already doing this, so like, excuse my ignorance, but I'm sure that there will become a point where people are able to opt out of including their, you know, data on the internet in AI models, right? Like, where whole libraries could say, hey, we don't want any of this to be indexed. And so then there's like a whole wealth of knowledge that's just missing, but because they don't want to be copyrighted.
Yeah, it's like a robots.txt for AI. Oh. It's like AI.txt saying like, you can't index this. And I mean, that feels dangerous to me then, because, you know, if you've got all the stuff that's created for the value of the stuff that's created being walled off, and the stuff that's being put into these models is the people that are, I mean, let's be honest, it's largely people who are trying to persuade, because like, you know, people who are trying to broadcast their stuff, that doesn't seem like that generates the best models and the best AI for, you know, the public good. Now, you know, there's obviously a corporate revenue and profit component here, but, you know, there always is.
There'll also be a pretty large disparity between the people that follow the regulations and don't. Like, every country is not going to have the same regulations. Right. And so a very deregulated country, they're going to make huge leaps and bounds, and their models are going to be so much more intelligent than the countries that overregulate and they have a bunch of information missing, which is also fascinating.
So then what happens if you like import a Chinese model that used US copyrighted information? Are you liable?
I don't know. I mean, obviously that's the example that comes up a lot because there's been so many issues with IP, especially companies that, you know, manufacture in China and then their IP just shows up in some other product. I feel like what I've heard is like, there's not really much you can do about that, you know, and because there's just, you have no jurisdiction there. And it might be the exact same thing with AI models.
I've got a friend who developed an egg washer, had it manufactured in China, and 5 minutes later, there were 30 other types available on Amazon.
An egg washer?
Like literally like an egg washer, yeah.
I didn't know people needed an egg washer. But
only in the South.
isn't that just called like running water?
Water.
Your hands? I don't
know. Yeah.
It's a great idea. Okay. Egg washer. But the point is, he has the idea is the same. He developed this thing. And he decided to have it produced over there. And so it's at that point, once he's having it produced, that somebody looks at it and goes, we can manufacture that, take the logo off.
Yeah.
And they stole his idea. He's not protected under US law at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, like, I mean, so that's how that stuff works. Like, I don't see why it's going to be any different with AI technology.
And that's a pretty clear result that I think we'll see, is that people are going to get super, super guarded with the information that they actually can be guarded with. And I think that's a for sure type of thing.
Well, we are getting to the top of our promised 15 minutes. There's not many takeaways this week other than this is probably just a bigger and thornier issue than a lot of people expect when they start getting into this stuff. And it's interesting because it makes me wonder how much work there's going to be around using these systems while they're saving us all the time and the work we used to do. And I wonder how many people are really thinking about that aspect of implementing them and all of the fights and challenges and discrepancies and decisions that are coming, from a very humanist perspective.
They're, freeing up all the time that we need to regulate them by taking all those tasks.
I think the takeaway is the same as it was last week. Don't panic, no matter what Casey says in here. Don't panic.
Which was a song that was cut into a Girl Talk song. So comes around.
maybe panic.
Perfect place to end. All right. Well, this is a fun topic, and it was nice to do kind of a deep dive this week. Next week we can get back to our standard hot topics and articles. And we'll hope, I won't be here next week, but I hope the three of you, actually Casey won't be here either because Casey will be with me. So Jared and Ren, I hope you guys have a great time next week, and I hope we continue to see everybody joining us.
Next week should be fun.
Get ready.